Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One.
Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm your host, Will, and as always, I'm joined with Ben and Paul to discuss a fascinating Sakhir Grand Prix from the Bahrain International Circuit, Outer Loop. Ben, just to start off with, we've got a new winner in Formula One, Sergio Perez. But I think more importantly, just a brilliant race that kept us on the edge of our seats for all 87 laps.
Yeah, there's no denying that the probably first and only Sakhir Grand Prix absolutely delivered. It was fantastic from start to finish.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that given there were so many laps, there was a fear that maybe it could drag on a little bit. But I remember looking up at the screen and being like, oh, God, there's 14 laps gone already. It was just flying by and so much was going on. Paul, I take it that you found it equally entertaining.
Yeah, it was just a superb race. I call it a beautiful race because it really was beautiful. It had everything. The only regret was Charles sort of lead foot on the didn't get the braking right and just took out him and Max. I just imagine if those two guys were in it right till the end, that would have been awesome. But especially Max, I really believe Max had a winning car in him. He even was a bit ginger off the line because he knew. And I think, yeah, I was just gutted for him that he was a victim of that. I don't think he had anything to do with it. He did what he had to do. But after that, you know, who would have said that Sergio from the back would have ploughed through the field in that way? It was just absolutely astounding. Ben, it reminds me of a Mark Webber win. He even got a 10 second penalty, and he still won that race. I don't know if you can recall which one that was.
Yeah, Nürburgring 2011. No, sorry, Nürburgring 2009. Sorry, and that was also his first win. And I think very similar to Perez as well, because he was a very long-serving F1 driver. Winning his first race, you know, Sunday was actually Sergio's 190th Grand Prix start and his first win. So absolutely tremendous. And I know that there's a huge amount going on, you know, with the Mercedes guys and as Paul mentioned with Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc. But we've got to start with Sergio Perez. This was a brilliant drive. He looked so racy from the start. Unfortunate, obviously, to get caught up in that incident with Leclerc. You know, I think that there's an argument he maybe could have left a tad more space, but you know, Leclerc was fully locked up. I think that's 100% Leclerc's fault, and he's taken a penalty for that. But once that happened, maybe even helped in a very strange way with the strategy. But you know, it's a fantastic drive from Perez. He was so aggressive, but also very clean, making the moves when he needed to. You know, how impressive was that, Ben?
It's everything you could have hoped for from Perez at this point, you know, in everything that's going on with his career. It's everything you could have hoped for and more. You know, he's just proving why he's such a quality driver. I mean, to not only come back from last, but to do 46 laps on that medium, you know, while putting in, you know, fantastic pace, getting past all those cars, putting himself into a position where he could win before all the craziness with Mercedes happened. You know, it just speaks volumes to how good a driver he is. And I think I'm not that this has been repeated ad nauseum at this point, but it just sort of, you know, cements the fact that if we lose him next year, it's a travesty because he is easily one of the 10 best drivers in Formula One.
Yeah, it's a weird one for me because I actually thought that he made a bit of a bad start to the season. I don't think he was producing his best driving. And when the decision was made to actually drop him and keep Lance to bring in Sebastian Vettel, he was actually, you know, pretty even on points with Lance Stroll at that point. And while I think we all know that he's a better driver, you could see how there was some kind of argument for it. But since that point, he's been absolutely outstanding, actually probably some of the best driving of his entire career. And I think a driver like him, who's been close a couple of times to a win, he really is someone who is deserving of a win. And I don't like that argument sometimes because I think people use it a bit too much about what people deserve. You know, you got to go and earn your own results. But I think Sergio deserved a win and I'm so happy he got one. Paul, how impressed were you with Sergio this weekend?
I think you guys have covered all the bases. You know, it's just absolutely fantastic. honestly, it's no surprise that he nursed his tires. I don't think there's a better guy on tires in Formula One. You know, he just, even since he was a kid at Sauber, he just could always bring that car home. And yeah, sensational. I just think it's, Red Bull have just no excuses. You know, they're struggling for a second driver. Max, you know, has got absolutely no support. In a situation like this, it showed clearly that they need a second driver, which they don't have, because, okay, Max was eliminated, no fault of his own on the first lap, and Max is a bit accident-prone on the opening laps. And if you had another guy there to step up to the breach, with that car, I think it was a potential winning car, or at least a podium car, and Alex never got near it, and, you know, the guy that they should put in that car won the race. I don't know what's going on with Red Bull. It would be the greatest PR stunt they could do if they chose Sergio. And I think Sergio did everything on the night to actually prove that he's got what it takes. In terms of Racing Point, I'm going to suggest this, that yes, at the beginning they were out at sea, and honestly, they should have been winning a lot earlier. I think this car was superb, and they've only really found the sweet spot with it now. And Sergio is sort of bringing the most out of it. You've got to remember, Mercedes didn't win on Sunday, but Mercedes did win on Sunday because last year's car painted pink won. So, you know, what's the problem? It's still a Mercedes. But the reality is this, is that I think it took them far longer than they expected to find the comfort zone with this car. And now that they found it, I think they're going to be, I think I might have said before this race they were going to be good here, and I think they'll be good in Abu Dhabi because I think they really, the cars come to them, and I think Sergio's on top of it. So absolutely superb, and as Ben said, super travesty if he's not in Formula One next year.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that Perez didn't quite get to grips with it for maybe the first half of the season, but now he's got it under him and he looks amazing. You know, some of the best driving of his career. This win wasn't just, a bit fortunate to get the win, maybe like Gasly's was. And obviously, Gasly's is a great performance, but it was a huge amount of fortune. Perez came from the back of the grid. He overtook a number of cars here. Obviously, he doesn't get the win if the Mercedes situation doesn't happen. But other than that, he was the best driver out there today. And yeah, he looks like he's got that car completely under him. He should have had a podium last week. He should have had a podium at Imola, and they pitted him out of that position. You know, he could have been on the podium kind of four races in a row now. And yeah, he's been absolutely exceptional recently. And he really looks like he's got that pink Mercedes kind of completely where he wants it. And it's a real shame. You know, even if he does go to Red Bull, that he's in a situation now where he's completely comfortable with his surroundings, and he's getting taken out of it.
This whole Stroll Perez, Stroll's dad triangle thing has been, you know, played out ad nauseum, so I'm not really to go into that too much. But clearly, if you're just picking drivers on merit, it's Sergio that's staying. And he's been proving this. I would actually say, funnily enough, it's sort of ever since he got Corona is when he basically started picking it up straight after that. Because I think, and this won't be exactly correct because I haven't, this is my laziness, I haven't updated the head-to-head stats in a few races now. But basically since then, he was pretty much thrashing Lance in qualifying. Like, even if the race results weren't there, like, his pace just went up a notch. And now the results are coming, you know, obviously in these last, basically ever since Mugello, really. So that's the second half of the season. He's just been on it. He's had one race, basically, where he hasn't scored points. And the races where he is scoring points, it's always, you know, either best of the rest, you know, just outside the Red Bulls and the Mercedes, or even amongst it. So, yeah, he's just proved his quality over and over.
So, Paul, I'm going to give you the first crack at this one. Obviously, aside from Sergio Perez and Racing Point and a remarkable win, the big story this weekend was George Russell in replacing Lewis Hamilton. I said before the weekend, I said if he could get within 0.2 of Valtteri Bottas in qualifying, he's doing a great job. And then he was within less than 0.5, I think it was 0.026. He looked a match for Valtteri all weekend, and then he got ahead of him at the start, and he should have won the race.
Yeah, astounding. Nothing I've ever seen, actually, apart from, you know, when Max did the business at in Spain, but under different circumstances, you know. And I think with this one, I don't know. I don't even know. I was gobsmacked. It was a roller coaster of emotions for me. I mean, you know, sitting there, really wishing for George to win, and also to a certain extent, sort of my heart sort of saying, "Come on, Valtteri, show us what you got." And actually, at the end of the day, Mercedes just tripped up so badly that I've never seen anything like that. Just too many questions were in my mind because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a fan and I get emotionally involved when I'm watching the race. And just suddenly, you know, Russell on it all evening long, just take, and he's got a good lead. He comes out of the pits 8 seconds ahead, and suddenly he's got a power unit problem. I mean, he's got a power problem. He loses 3 seconds, and I'm thinking, no, is Toto got a remote control or something? What's happening here? Because honestly, the worst thing that could have happened for Mercedes is for George to win that race, because it just throws everything up in the air. I'm not going to say I agree with everything, but the question is, why pay a guy 50 million when you can pay a guy 5 and he can do the same thing? Why has Valtteri had it right for so long? You know, there is so many uncomfortable questions. And I agree. You can't say, oh, George deserves a drive now at Mercedes. I think he does. I would say to Valtteri, sorry, mate, you're gone. Because why? Because this kid had 4 hours in the car and he nearly beat him to pole. And he would have whacked him in the race if Mercedes didn't mess up so horrendously.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make some good points there. And obviously, you're never going to get away from these people who say anyone could win in this car. And this car, this 2020 car, isn't a very dominant car. And I don't doubt that there are lots of drivers who, you know, if they had a teammate who they're better driver than, they could win in this car. That's not the case in 2017, not the case in 2018. You know, going up against Nico Rosberg is a different prospect to going up against Valtteri Bottas. Even last season, you know, Charles Leclerc had 7 pole positions. So this is a very good car. But for one, that shouldn't take anything away from what Lewis Hamilton's achieved this season or over his entire career. And that also shouldn't take anything away from George Russell and what he achieved this weekend. Because he came in, and I don't think Valtteri Bottas is a great racer. I don't think he can manage the tyres very well, and I don't think he's good in wheel-to-wheel combat. But he is definitely a fast qualifier. That is undisputable. If you look back at his record against Felipe Massa, Williams, he's a very quick qualifier, and he's done pretty well against Hamilton as well. And Russell was right up there with him straight away. I think that we now all want to see Russell benchmarked against Lewis Hamilton, because you know that will be a fascinating battle, and I think Russell can do a great job against him. I think he's actually a special driver. I don't think... This wasn't like putting Nicholas Latifi in the Mercedes and him going and winning, then maybe you'd be like, literally anyone could win in this car. George Russell won GP3, and then in his first season in F2, he won it. You know, he is an incredibly highly rated driver. This isn't just any old guy. This is a driver who potentially on the same level as Hamilton and Verstappen and Leclerc. So I think that people who think this is some kind of evidence that literally anyone could get in that car are completely wrong, because I think George is an incredibly special driver. I don't want to take any credit away from him, because what he did this weekend is nothing short of remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I would concur with that. I've always been a big defender of Lewis's performances in the car and sort of the difference he makes. And the thing as well is, like, just because George comes in and does a very, very good job against Valtteri, you know, that's and as you're sort of saying there, Will and Paul, it's... That's more of a testament to George's own ability than him sort of having sort of, you know, this, you know, card, which is just magically makes him a world-class driver. The only way we'll know for sure, of course, is, you know, how much of a difference it makes is if they go up against each other, which hopefully we get at some point in the near future. But yeah, I think I would, it would be great in an ideal world, and it won't happen because, as you say, like, this is what happens with people on Twitter. But it'd be great if we could just celebrate the talent of Russell without having to denigrate Lewis or, you know, say anything about the car. But I guess that's just how opinion goes these days, unfortunately.
It's a very toxic social media environment that, you know, you can't have an opinion, and if it's suddenly you're attacked by a bunch of fanboys and stuff, it's very weird. But the reality is that Lewis is special, and I think he needs, I think, I'll put it this way, I would imagine Lewis would relish George in the sister car, because he's realized that Valtteri isn't actually that good, and that given time, George will be much better than him, and therefore a bigger challenge for Lewis. And I really believe it in my heart that when Lewis says, I don't care who my teammate is, that he does not care who his teammate is. And let's remember, this is the guy who did match blow by blow a two-time world champion in his rookie season. And, you know, you can't take that ever away from him because that sets the foundation of how he goes to war in Formula One. So therefore, whatever you give it to Lewis, he'll take it to the next level. And normally he can. And I think George Russell will just push him even further. And that's why I think Toto, if he's a sporting man, would put those two guys in together. Sort of Lewis in his sort of swan song for Mercedes, with George Russell, the heir apparent.
Also, a couple of points here. There's no reason that Mercedes have to have the absolute two best drivers they could possibly get in that car. You know, if anything, strategically, it's actually something that will cost them. You look at McLaren in 2007, because they had Lewis Hamilton and Fernando, who were so competitive with each other, they lost the championship.
Yes, sure. You know, there's that story that Pascal Wehrlein didn't get the drive with Mercedes because he was a shoe-in at one point. And he didn't get it because they felt that there would be a, you know, conflict.
It's a situation, and you know, look at Schumacher. He never had competitive teammates, but that doesn't seem to be brought up as a mark against him. Lewis has actually had very good teammates throughout his career. You know, he's gone up against Jenson Button, Fernando Alonso, Nico Rosberg. You know, they're very good drivers. And I don't understand.
Oh, don't forget Heikki Kovalainen.
You know, Heikki was actually
Formula One race winner. Heikki Kovalainen
pretty good in that first season at Renault in 2007. But I don't really understand that, and I think that I'd love to see Russell against Hamilton in a Mercedes. But at the same time, Mercedes are not obliged to do that.
Yeah, it would be counterproductive. Yeah,
exactly.
I wouldn't do it. I would not do it. But but it's not.
They'll end up doing it because if they leave Russell at Williams any longer, he'll leave. He'll go to Red Bull or he'll go to Ferrari.
In fact, hey, listen, because he's Red Bull take him? Why don't Red Bull just break the bank and just take him, man?
If I was Christian Horner, I would be 100% having a chat with him this after that. Like because the thing is, we've seen Albon get in the Red Bull and be 0.6 away from Max Verstappen. You know, we've seen Giancarlo Fisichella get in a Ferrari and be nowhere near matching Kimi Raikkonen. You know, we've seen guys get in cars and be nowhere before. It happens all the time. But Russell got in and straight away he was good. And I just think that shows that he's a certain level of driver. Paul?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, I think he's the star for the future. In our headlines, you'll see it. I think Toto Wolff just sums it up, but he said that this is a star for the future. The sky's the limit. New star is born. You know, so seriously, it's just the problem is this: is we've got 20 seats in Formula One, and I just don't want this kid to fall by the cracks because there's a lot of good guys that haven't made it and never got a crack like this. And I think on a night like this, it was almost a fairy tale. I think he ticked all the boxes apart from bringing home the big trophy, but then I think Mercedes let him down. But hopefully he's got a second chance in Abu Dhabi. Eh?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the final thing that we should probably touch on before we move on from Russell is the fact that obviously this was obviously a brilliant performance, but at the same time, you know, Max Verstappen was in within half a tenth of Valtteri Bottas in qualifying. And then he came out of the race on the first lap. And Sergio Perez, the other guy who looked like he potentially could have been fighting at the front, you know, from the beginning, was also sent to the back of on the first lap. So obviously, as much as he did well to beat Bottas, it would have been interesting to see how the presence of Max Verstappen and potentially Sergio Perez would have changed the kind of dynamic of that battle. What do you think, Ben?
Oh, absolutely. Especially Max being in there, that would have made a huge difference. And he would have very much been in contention for the win, you would have assumed, because their pace, long run pace on Friday was very, very strong. But that's, you know, that's Formula One. And you have these accidents where drivers get taken out and it's not their fault. And I think Max, more than most people, knows that because that's how he won his first ever race in the car when Nico and Lewis took themselves out in Spain 2016. So, you know, as much as it sucks to, you know, not have him there and, you know, you'd have liked to always have another driver who's definitely up for the battle in there. These things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope Deleuze recovers.
Yeah, let's wish him well, man. You know what's quite interesting? Sorry, on that point, he hasn't done anything on social media at all. So he's either, I don't know if it's deliberate, I just hope he's in good shape, man. I think everyone needs to pray for the guy because it's very unlike of him to be silent. And now, so I must say, often while I was watching the race yesterday, I was wondering if Lewis was watching at the same time, just as a matter of interest, you know?
Yeah, I would be very fascinated by that because, for one thing, I don't think Lewis really cares about the talk. You know, we've seen how he responds to Jackie Stewart saying that it's just because of the car. I don't think he pays any attention to that. I think he's got supreme confidence in his own abilities. So I don't think he pays single.
But he would be intrigued, don't you think? Don't you think he would be intrigued? Put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah, but
it's hard.
I mean, if you're Lewis Hamilton, you're a 7-time world champion. It's pretty much, you know, no one who you've ever gone up against has been as quick as you in terms of like raw speed. I don't think that he's worried about George Russell personally.
No, but I agree.
He
I don't
knows
think
exactly
he's worried.
How much he's got in hand. He knows exactly how much he's got in hand over Valtteri Bottas as well, doesn't he? So I can't see him being at home panicking about George Russell. You know, he may be wrong, but that's just the nature of a Formula One driver. I don't think that they think anyone's quicker than them.
Of course not. No, I'm not saying that. I'm actually more saying, would he be intrigued to see if George beats Valtteri, or wouldn't he care, or is he too ill? I mean, God forbid that he is.
Well, if anything, he might have got straight on the horn and been like, Toto, get George in the car next year. I want this challenge.
Let's see. Let's see what happens. Intriguing times, actually.
That would be fascinating. But we should give a little bit of praise to Esteban Ocon and Lance Stroll, obviously finishing up the podium. Esteban's first podium in Formula One, and I think a brilliant moment for, you know, a French driver driving for a French team. You know, it obviously meant a lot to him. He's been through a lot. He had to spend a year on the sidelines. He's come back. He's had a really difficult challenge against Daniel Ricciardo, but he's kept plugging away. And I think he's looked improved in recent weeks, and yeah, I'm happy for him.
Yeah, me too. It's been a pretty well. It's tough. I don't want to say underwhelming because Daniel Ricciardo sets quite a high bar. Aussie accent, obviously quite biased there, but it hasn't been the easiest comeback season for him. But yeah, it's nice to see him get one. And the thing is, whether or not he's as good as a Ricciardo or whatever, he's still a fairly decent Formula One driver, and he's been put through the ringer. He's sort of, you know, has been dealt sort of some tough blows with sort of being the odd man out at Racing Point 2 years ago, and then getting passed over for Bottas for the Mercedes drive. So to come through all that and, you know, come back to the podium now, and obviously it meant a lot to him. You can understand why, and it's nice to see. It's just a good story, and you hope. You hope that he can sort of build on this because I think he deserved the hype when he came into the sport. And while this year overall hasn't exactly, he hasn't set the world on fire, it's hopefully a result. He's still, I think, only 24 years old or 23. He's very young. Hopefully it's a result that he can sort of, you know, gives him the confidence to start delivering on the potential we all sort of thought he had, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think as much as you are Australian, and we have to take that into account, I think you're right about Ricciardo. Like, he's been so good this season. So good. And, you know, had he gone with a one-stop strategy today, he could have potentially been in the shout for the win. So it's no disgrace for Ocon to be behind Ricciardo. And it's actually been a pretty small gap in qualifying in recent weeks. It's just that midfield has been so tight that it turns into, you know, four or five places. So, yeah, I think that Ocon probably hasn't been quite as good as some of us would have hoped, but I think this is probably Ricciardo's best year in Formula One, maybe barring 2014. So, yeah, you've got to give him credit for keeping up against that battle. But at the same time, you know, if he thinks Ricciardo's difficult, then he's about to get a shock next season when a certain Spaniard becomes his teammate. Paul, we know that you're Lance Stroll's number one fan, so explain his race today. You know, I think that 48 lap stint on the soft tyres to start the race is pretty impressive. But, you know, the situation with Perez coming through, do you think he could have been battling for the win? He was making a lot of excuses after the race when he was in his interview.
Well, first I'd like to say with Esteban, he needed that result. I don't think one race maketh a season, but he definitely did need to bring a big one home, and it was just good to see. He's level-headed, and yeah, coming up against Dan would have been an education for him. So yeah, on that note, I think he ticked a very important box on the night for himself, and let's see how he progresses from there. In terms of Lance, I was kind of disappointed with his reaction after the race. I thought he would have been kind of thrilled that he's the team that his dad bought for him for about $1 billion finally won a race, and maybe it wasn't him on the top step of the podium, but it was the guy who saved the team and actually gave the opportunity for Lawrence to go in with a checkbook and buy the whole outfit that next year becomes Aston Martin. And I think that, you know, he's young, but he's not stupid, so he should have actually been a lot more. I felt he needed to be a slightly more compassionate and humble, and just be grateful that his father's dream team has actually paid dividends. But instead, he had a bit of a lip and a bit of a sulk, and he kind of felt he was forced to say, "Oh, well done to Sergio." Then he went on a big moan about his car. Sorry, mate, you were totally beaten on the day, and sir, you don't have. I mean, I'm the fan club president, but I'm calling him into the room and say, "Bud, you got to really, you know, tip your hat off to this guy, because this was special." It was good to see, though. Having said all that, it was good to see in the press release afterwards, the spin doctors put in some nice words that, you know. But honestly, he went down a notch in my estimation, and you know, I've always defended the kid, but there was a bit of a spoiled brat syndrome in him there, and that wasn't pleasant. So yeah, I wasn't, you know, that sullied what might have been a fantastic result for him. But sportsmanship, I believe, at this level, especially on such historic nights, which we saw last night, is paramount. And little Lance was just a spoiled little rich kid on the day. It was sad to see. It was brief, but it was enough to see his true colours. And like I said, I might resign as his fan club president.
What? No, Paul.
Yeah.
You got to stay.
I'm pissed off with him, man. And he drove well, let's be honest. He did drive well for third place, and he deserved it. You know, it was a good drive. You know, Lance on high attrition events is good. But, you know, a racing driver, a sportsman, a global sportsman, is far more than just a guy who can drive fast. He's just got to be more humble. And I think he lacked that on the day. Lack of education, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he needed to just show a little bit more humility. And I think that's a really important point. You know, this is even George Russell, who's been given this shock opportunity, and he's suddenly kind of thrown in, and he knows that this could be his one opportunity to, you know, really turn heads at Mercedes. The first thing he's saying in his interview is, you know, well done to Checo. This guy's been around for
everyone said that. I think just about every guy. Yeah, you're right.
And he's saying, you know, well done, Checo, you deserve this. And Lance is complaining, and this is his teammate. This is the guy, as you say, helped save the team that he drives for, and that Lance will take the benefits from when he continues to drive for them next season, and Checo is being thrown out on his ass. So, yeah, that was disappointing. But, you know, as you say, it was a good drive. He has actually been pretty unlucky this season, I think. You know, you look at Mugello, he was, you know, had suffered an issue completely not his fault where he could have been in contention for a podium. You look at Russia when he's taken out in the first lap. He has had some bad luck this season, but yeah, that wasn't his best moment. But before we go, we do have a couple more things to touch on. Obviously, Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc came together on the opening lap. Ben, where do you stand on this incident, and what do you think Max could have achieved had he stayed in the race?
Yeah, well, first of all, as I sort of alluded to before, I think Max would have definitely been in contention for the win. But yeah, it's just, it's very disappointing from Charles. And, you know, he put his hand up after the race and said, you know, this is my fault, so credit to him for doing that. It was very much sort of a reminder that as good as he is, and there's no denying he's one of the elite drivers on the grid, but there's still some things about him that, you know, remind you that he's 23 years old and he's got a lot to learn. Because that was one of those situations where, and I think you said this before, Will, like, you know, Perez at the time, you can make an argument, and, you know, maybe another world, he looks in his mirror at the right time, sees Charles coming, doesn't turn in quite as sharp, accident avoided. But if you're Charles going into that situation, you have to say to yourself, okay, I've got a balance here between the opportunity, what the opportunities could get me, and the risk to my race of doing this. And the risk just wasn't worth it. and he didn't sort of make the he didn't find the right answer to the equation in the moment. And hopefully that's something he learns from. You know, and I would assume he will. But yeah, it's something you would chalk up to being a young driver and being, at least on this occasion, a bit too aggressive for his own good.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Charles is clearly rapid, and that qualifying lap was pretty awesome. But he needs to rein in some of those first lap incidents. And yeah, he made a mistake at Turkey that cost him a podium. He's made a mistake here, which could have cost him a really good result and a nice haul of points for Ferrari. Paul, what do you think?
I'm going to go on the defensive, although, you know, I do believe it was his fault. You know, he brain fade, brake fade, whatever, all at the same time. And that was that. Two very good guys. And of course it was his fault. Yeah, he could do nothing. He tried to underplay it a little bit, but it was totally his fault. But again, you know, Ferrari are giving him a wheelbarrow to drive. So he's got to push it around and everyone else is in race cars. So you got to look where Seb was the whole weekend compared to him, especially in qualifying where the kid did like, you know, over half a second faster than Seb on a track that shouldn't, you know, the gap shouldn't be that big. That Ferrari had no place to be in fourth place. And once you're in there, you know, you're going to try your best. So I think Charles is only guilty of overdriving. And overdriving because Ferrari under Mattia Binotto are just probably the most useless Ferrari team. Well, it's definitely the most useless Ferrari team I've ever witnessed. I mean, even, you know, okay, Mercedes pit stop was the absolute disaster. I don't think I've ever seen a worse pit stop in the history of pit stops. But let's not forget, I mean, Ferrari had one car in the field, and every time Seb did a pit stop, they botched it. So, you know, it's Ferrari at their very lowest ebb with the worst car, probably worse than an Alfa Romeo. And you've got this kid, Charles, who just wants to drive. And he's overdriving it, and that's all he's guilty of. So, you know, give him a decent car, Ferrari, and we're going to have a guy who can win races. But with the heap that he's given him, and I've got total disdain for Ferrari after this season. Not Ferrari as Ferrari, but the Mattia Binotto era Ferrari is a disaster. And unfortunately, a great driver could be sullied by this whole thing. And, you know, you got to understand the confidence the guy goes through. You know, he's trying to be there. He's up and forth. He's going. He knows. He knew from the minute he started that race, he was on the way. Oh, he was going backwards. Okay, he knew that. So he has to be super aggressive, and because he has to be super aggressive, he has incidents, and then we blame him. But I don't think, you know, it's fair for him to take all the blame. Yes, he has his moments of red mist, but he's driving a donkey. So, you know, that's all I can say.
No, that is fair. But at the same time, you know, you've got to go in knowing what your car can achieve, and you've got to go about, you know, doing the best job of achieving that. Is, you know, trying to make a move up the inside of Valtteri Bottas really going to impact where he finishes in the race overall? Maybe he just slips into fifth and then tries to maintain that position where he's probably got a better chance. So, yeah, I get your point for sure, but I still think that he could have approached that slightly better.
And, can I just say
something? He's ruined the race of Max, and he very, you know, could have easily ruined the race of Sergio as well.
Can I just say something about, the Max factor? And, you know, we compare Charles to Max. I think it's a bit unfair, you know, because Max has been in a top team, and he's been the top dog in that top team since 2016, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, you'd say that's when he joined the team. 2017, I'd say, definitely.
But in 2016, you know, he won the hearts and minds of Red Bull because Daniel felt marginalized. So let's say from 2016, Max knows what it's like to be numero uno, okay? That's 4 years. That's 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 5 seasons in a top team with winning kit. Charles has only been in a top team for a year and a half. Well, for 1 year, last year, he was in a top team, and now he's in a midfield team again. He's like in a Sauber again. You know, he does not have the experience that Max had at this phase of his career compared to Max, because Max, although he's younger, ironically, he's got more years. So he's got so much more experience racing at the front, whereas Charles doesn't. Let's look at Max a year and a bit into his racing with Red Bull. I do remember he had some wayward moments. He had some crashes. He had to reel it in. So I think we make a mistake comparing Charles right now to Max right now. I think Charles is still 2 or 3 years before we can actually start thinking that he's going to be like Max. He's ticking all the boxes now, but he's still 2-3 years behind Max in the bigger picture. Does that make sense?
No, I think you're definitely not talking nonsense. That's for sure. I think that.
I like to hear Ben say that.
Ben.
Well, I never say that, Paul. You're always talking nonsense, as far as I'm concerned.
No, seriously, is that bull?
No, it's true, because, like, clearly you're right in the respect that regardless of age, you would consider Verstappen a veteran of the sport, and Charles isn't. But yeah, at the same time, like, you would still hope that Charles would know better, and he's had some pretty, harsh lessons already in his career. I'm thinking, was it Austria, the first race of the season, where he had that accident with Vettel?
Yeah.
That was his fault.
Yeah, this is very much not his first time doing this, is it?
No. So that's the thing as well. So, like, I do take your point, but at the same time, like, he needs to learn from them, and he needs to start learning from them quickly. And, if everything come out of Ferrari that, we're going to be back in 2022, well, then he doesn't necessarily have 2 or 3 years. He might have 1 year to sort of iron these mistakes out, because this is the thing, right? Whether it's Max or Charles or whoever, they're going up against Lewis, and Lewis doesn't make these mistakes. So you've really got to bring your A game at all times.
No, I think that is well said. Let's, just before we finish, have a quick discussion about Mick Schumacher. This is away, obviously, from the Grand Prix, but he managed to sew up the F2 championship. He didn't finish the race inside the points, but Callum Ilott failed to... I think he needed to come second with the fastest lap or win. Callum Ilott failed to do that in the sprint race. And Mick Schumacher is now the Formula 2 champion. Callum Ilott finished second, and Yuki Tsunoda finished third. So, obviously, we already know that Mick Schumacher is going to be driving at Haas next season, with Nikita Mazepin. If you want to hear more about that, do listen to a previous episode where Paul especially was upset about that decision. Yuki Tsunoda very much looking like he will be paired with Pierre Gasly at AlphaTauri next season. But Paul, I know this is a driver that you've been following closely for much of his career. I think this is a super, super impressive achievement. Pretty much since he first got in a go-kart, he'll have been feeling the pressure of his dad and that name and everything that means in motorsport. And to not only get to F1, but to win Formula 2 in his second season, to win European F3, I think he's done a brilliant job.
I'm not going to mention his surname. I'm just going to say Mick, because if you mention his surname, and there's an influence, there's pressure. So Mick did everything you expect of a junior driver. First season, went into Formula 3, learnt the ropes, wasn't super impressive, just did everything right. Then he came to the second season and he just got better and better and better. Then he hit a streak where he was amazing and boom, he was champion. Formula 2, same thing. He reset, he learnt the ropes, year 2, boom. Despite a lot of bad luck thrown at him, he took the championship. I'm super thrilled that Mick's going to be in Formula 1 next year. Yeah, let's say, I still think Alfa Romeo was the right call, but let's accept it. He's in Formula 1. Ferrari have sent Simone Resta to go look after him, so he's in good hands. And let's reset and let's hope he has a fantastic time at Haas. He deserves it. He's in Formula 1 on merit, not because of his dad's name. Seriously, he's there 110% on merit. I'm a Mick fan already.
Yeah, I was very impressed by his performance, particularly Saturday's feature race, where he had that fighting drive through the field. And I think that shows, although it was already proven, as sort of this one final reminder that, whatever his name got him up to, say Formula 3, he's earned his place past there completely on merit, and he definitely deserves to be in F1 next year. And it's going to be interesting to see how he goes. If he sort of follows his current trend of sort of taking some time to, acclimate himself to the next rung on the ladder, then I hope you know, people give him that sort of slack that people don't expect him to come in next year and just be sort of setting the world on fire. You know, if he gets that time, and I would assume he gets that time, at least 2 or 3 years at Haas, I think he could turn into a very, very good Formula One driver.
No, absolutely. I agree very much with both of you.
Can I just say one thing in closing? Sorry, just before you do that. Can I just, after Ben, just say this? One thing that has to be mentioned, though, is Yuki Tsunoda has emerged as a very, very impressive young driver. And I think he might be one of Japan's finest if he's well looked after. In that AlphaTauri, I think he's going to give Pierre a good run for his money. He definitely has that spirit. And I was very impressed with him, especially in the latter half of the season.
No, he looks like a really talented driver. I've been very, very impressed with him. He wasn't someone who necessarily was that well fancied going into the season. Obviously, in F3, there was a massive advantage of the Prema guys from last season in Schwartzman and Derivola. But he's been really, really good this season. Put his teammate in the shade massively. Taken pole positions, taken wins. I think that AlphaTauri is a really good place for him to go as well. You know, that used to be a backmarker team, but they're no longer that at all. You know, they're race winners this season. On certain tracks, they are challenging kind of top five honours. That's a really good place for him to go. Probably actually a better place than going to Haas, funnily enough. So, yeah, really looking forward to seeing him in F1, provided the rumours are true and he does end up at AlphaTauri. But that's pretty much all we've got time for today. I know we potentially ran a little bit longer than normal, but that was a absolutely thrilling race at the Bahrain Outer Loop, and it'd be interesting to see if we get to go back there and race in the future. We will be tying up the season next weekend with our review of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, but then we'll be
with you throughout the off-season. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.